You've been talking about denial for a long time. Why did you decide to write it and publish it now?
You know, my last book ended with me saying, you know, now I know how to create the best day cycle, but I can't write that book because I haven't lived it. I don't know it. I don't know what's coming. And so I've been living that since then. And, you know, really what this is the next step in me reclaiming myself, because this book goes where the first book didn't. I held back on a lot of things in that first book because my voice as a child, it was not okay to use my voice. I wasn't allowed to develop my own authenticity. I had to create adaptations to navigate and survive. And so while there's some of that in the first book, there's a lot of it that isn't. Well, this book, I kind of blew the lid off that. You know, self-deception and denial is at the root of every problem. And what I find fascinating is it's not the cornerstone of every personal development program. Well, that's why so many people are struggling. That's why the world is struggling. Because at the heart of all relationship issues, political issues, social issues, career issues, friendship issues, health issues, you name it, the book, in my opinion, conclusively shows that denial and self-deception is the single greatest killer and pandemic and epidemic and has been for centuries of the human species. And what it hides, the reason it's so prevalent, is we're all detached from our authentic self. Well, you know, really me choosing to take all of that on, I'm not going to make, you know, my biggest fear is I'm going to not hurt people because I don't have that power. I'm not that powerful, but that people won't like me, because my job as a kid was I had to become whatever they wanted to get what I could get. And so to speak my truth, it didn't go well as a kid. Well, that's, you know, my self-deception and denial. If I speak my truth, I'll lose attachment, because we all get placed in what I call, in this book, I lay it out, the attachment authenticity bind. We all have a choice as children. The first thing we need to survive is attachment. If we don't physically and emotionally attach, we will die. But we also need, as a species, the pursuit of our authenticity, who we really are, our authentic selves, our authentic power, our own morals and values, needs and wants, negotiables and non-negotiables, our own feelings, everything. Well, that's what gets squashed in childhood. We're not, you know, this is, you know, parents hate their kids because they don't have the same political beliefs, social beliefs. You know, there's always this bind we're placed in. So all of us, I can take anyone and in three questions, blow up their life and show how they're not in their authentic selves. It's everybody. It's not somebody. It's everybody because of this bind. And, you know, so that's me. Well, for me to express my authenticity, I'm reliving the worst day cycle, the shame and denial portions of, wait a minute, if I pursue this, it means I lose attachment, even though my parents are gone. This is the subconscious part of the trauma of the way it works. We restrict ourselves from ourselves because we're beholden to that attachment bond. And so me writing this book was, you know, the next step of, okay, well, here's what it looks like to step into success. And success, as I defined in that first book, isn't the external achievement of things and possessions and money and all of that. It's regardless of where you are in the pursuit of your dreams and goals, that you're at peace inside. And that's the definition. That's true success. It's an internal process, not an external achievement. And so this is me pursuing that. Well, it's scary. You know, you're fighting back hardwired programs from childhood that say you have no value or worth unless you fit into what our parents need, because all of our parents are broken and damaged and all of them are stuck in childhood trauma, and they use us to try and medicate that away. Every parent does it. Doesn't make them bad. It makes them human. And because for centuries we've never taught about any of this, all parents are just doing the best they can. But so we all lose our authentic selves, and our authentic self is at all times has inherent value and worth. And so whenever we hesitate to do something, it's because we're detached from our authentic self. We think we, you know, my hesitation to write the book or even release it is a detachment from self, because now I'm looking for your approval or your acceptance or you not to be too angry, or, you know, that's placing my validation in your hands. Well, that's a detachment from, you know, a key ingredient of the authentic self is it recognizes at all times, whether it's living its perfection or imperfection, it has inherent value and worth. And so, you know, this book is two things. It is, I think it very convincingly shows how we're all massively in self-deception and denial, which means we're all massively detached from our authentic selves. And this lays out the process, one, to discover the truth, what I call the authentic self cycle, truth, responsibility, healing, and forgiveness. That we need to get into truth, that we're in deception. We need to take responsibility that no one hurts us. It's because of our worst day cycle we set ourselves up. And therefore, we need to take responsibility for our adult choices and do the healing work. And from that place, we can forgive ourselves and our perpetrators. And that act is the emotional authenticity process I've developed, which teaches you how to do that. And when you do that, you reattach to your authentic self, your inherent value and worth. And so then you can say and do things, you know, like writing this book. And if someone has a different reality, even if they're in deception and unable to accept the facts of what I've put out, you're okay, because you haven't made them your God anymore. You're attached to yourself. And so you see that their inability to absorb the truth is just their attachment authenticity bind, and they're doing the best they can. And when their denial mechanisms, when the consequences, because people don't pursue truth or recovery or healing, and they stay stuck in the worst day cycle because they're still getting too much out of playing the victim. They're getting rewarded. There are too many payoffs. And they all say, oh, I hate it. But that's only because they don't know how self-victimization, how it pays off for them. They haven't been taught all the different payoffs they get. But even after you teach them that, they'll still stay stuck in it until, and the reason they do it is these are all deception techniques that are giving them levels of attention and attachment that gives them short-term hits that makes it, you know, it's like an addict. That's the perfect example. An addict knows, man, if I have this drink, I can see the picture 3-4 days from now. I don't like it. But there's still a payoff for that first little buzz that comes on. And so they keep going at it, even knowing what consequences will come. Well, the day an addict lets go of their addiction is the second they picture that buzz, the consequence, because then they use deceptive techniques to go, well, that's not so bad those 4 days, and it goes away, and I don't do that really bad things when I sleep around. It's not a big deal. Like, they use all these deceptive techniques to minimize, suppress, repress, and deny how damaging all of their manipulative techniques are to keep alive the addiction. Well, that's all of us. Whether we're going to toxic people, relationships, it's their fault. That's what we do. We sit there and find all these are the manipulative, self-victimizing ways we re-injure ourselves, but talk ourselves out of it and make it somebody else's problem. We blame them. Well, we give that up, just like the addict, when we consider taking the sip and the pain of the consequences has now become so big that that's what we see. It overrides all the benefits we get, because if I use alcohol to sleep around, and I think there's a benefit to sleeping around, and you know, then my wife gets mad at me, but at least I'm getting attention. Like, they don't recognize that when their wife yells and screams because they had another affair, that's one of the payoffs. They've now got their wife's attention. They didn't know how to ask for their needs and wants and get true love and care genuinely. So that's how they do it. They purposefully victimize themselves and victimize their partner so that they get the attention, because some attention is better than none. See, they're out of reality. They're out of touch. They're in self-deception. And so all of the things they complain about, they're actually getting benefits, but they can't see it. Well, once the consequences become so severe, that's when they finally quit. That's when they get into the responsibility and healing part. And that's when they get into truth of, oh my God, I kept that addiction or that toxic relationship or poor career or whatever it may be. I kept it going because I was manipulating and controlling everyone and everything. And I got to stay the child. I never had to do the healing work. I never had to take responsibility. I could place it all on the government or some other political party or whatever it may be. I got them to do it. But you won't see that until you get into recovery. Most people won't see it. And, you know, so you could say that's where I've been. And I'm no longer okay with that. And so I'm ready to stick my neck out and reattach that, regardless if anybody reads this or anybody likes it. The only person who's ever obligated to hear me is myself. And so the book is really about me claiming my voice and my truth. Now, I believe I've laid out a really solid process that shows other people, if that's what they want, they can do it too. But in the end, the book is written for my own journey, for me. And that's the truth with anyone in this type of field. You're never doing it for anybody else. If you are, then you're in deception. If you think you are, then you're in deception. Massive deception. If you think you have that much power, then you're very early in the recovery journey. You're doing all of this for yourself, and then you share the journey. And if other people choose to take on any of the suggestions, you had no influence over that. That was a decision. I mean, I guess some influence because you put it out, but the belief that you somehow changed them, that's a very distorted view. They changed themselves. They took in the information and they made the choice within them. You had no power to do that. And so whenever you're in a personal development type of situation, the first and foremost, if you truly want to help people, you need to make damn sure you're doing it for you. And from that place, it'll be authentic. And from that place, it might have benefit, but only if they decide it'll benefit them, not because you said it would. You know, that's a lie. I mean, you know, I really try to love myself and go, you know, I'm doing a live stream on YouTube this weekend. I show very conclusively that Dr. Elaine Aaron, who created the whole empath, highly sensitive person genre, which they now say 20% of the population are empaths or highly sensitive people, that she massively misdiagnosed herself, that she's in massive deception, that if you watch her documentary right there in the first 5 minutes, she literally went through severe childhood trauma and went into complete denial about it and created this whole subculture. And I don't think, and her intent isn't malicious, but that's the problem with psychologists, psychiatry degrees. They don't learn about any of this. They just learn how to diagnose and prescribe. They treat the human body like it's a car engine and think it's all genes and cells. They don't learn about nurture and everything's nature. And so they're massively undereducated on what really develops us. And so she, as I watched it, she's just totally detached from truth and reality right in front of her eyes. Her own words, she literally describes severe childhood trauma and then deceives herself and calls herself highly sensitive. When what she's literally describing is two parents who were so filled with fear and shame that they traumatized their child into being sensitive and afraid. Like she literally described how childhood trauma happens. And instead of facing it, she went in the, you know, the worst day cycle. She went in shame and denial and created a false adapted persona right there and calls it empath. And now she has this whole subculture of people who, you know, believe they have some sort of human, you know, superhuman skill or trait. And if you confront them on it, they get very narcissistic. Like somebody, there was somebody blowing up. I have this short video where a long time ago I talked about empaths, and they're responding. Like that video has, I don't know, a million views, and there's 17,000 comments. They're commenting to Eric, just, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. No, I'm a gift. What I have is a gift. He doesn't know it. You wouldn't know unless you're gifted like us. Like that's the narcissistic thing of the empath is, you know, there's this human, superhuman gift. And I'm not trying to belittle them. But that's what that is, you know, because they claim the status of victim because they're so affected by others. And, you know, everyone's emotions. So that's a victimized position, which is disempowerment. But this is what many of us do, is we get victimized and we get disempowered. And we stay in this victim position because the empath ultimately is a victim position. They place themselves as prey to the narcissist or toxic people, right? They're always victimized because they're so gifted. And there, boom. That's how they then, just like a narcissist, manipulate and control and covertly become falsely empowered because now they're better than. Because I'm so gifted emotionally, because I was born with this superhuman trait, I'm above everyone, and they don't see how narcissistic-like that is. And now the difference is many of these, if given the proper information, will seek help. They'll get into truth and reality, know that actually what they experienced was childhood trauma, and they're severely codependent. And when they start addressing those issues, they can mature out of that. And so that's why I call it narcissistic-like. Because a true narcissist is almost impossible, like insanely rare that they would ever hear the information and be willing to deal with it. But there are many on this empath side that can be narcissistic. And so, you know, they have all these new narcissistic terms for everyone and everything. I don't really like to dance in that field, but, you know, if someone wants to, they can. You know, because in my experience, most people are just severely codependent and people don't know the difference between disempowered and falsely empowered. So they just call everyone a narcissist and all these subversions of narcissism. Like they've just created all, you know, 20,000.
It's funny because now there's this, now there are funny videos on Instagram for millennial communities talking about how millennials are dropping the narcissism word on everyone. Oh, he's a narcissist, she's a narcissist, my family's a narcissist, that friend's a narcissist, toxic people, toxic person, toxic place, toxic work people. You know, it's like,
yeah, and all of that is self-deception. That's what people don't realize, is when you judge, blame, hate, criticize anyone or anything, well, it might be true about them, the only reason you see it is because it's you. And that's the problem, is people hear that and they go, yeah, whatever. Well, in part because no one's laid out a process to show them how it's you. Well, that's what this book does. It shows you very convincingly and very easily how those people, as they're calling everyone else toxics and empaths or blaming the narcissist and coming after me, that they're literally talking to themselves. And that's what we all do. The book shows, I think, convincingly, almost. Language isn't to talk to other people. It's to talk to us. We use descriptors and metaphors, judgment and blame in everything. And all of that is us talking to, it's our authentic self talking back to us, trying to show us the way to reclaim ourselves. But no one's laid the process out for people to break down their words. It's they're having an idle conversation and describing some football play, that the metaphors and descriptors and the anger and angst in that actually has to do with their own childhood trauma and unhealed pain. They don't know that. And so that's what the book shows, is here's how you do it. Here's how it is. And as soon as you see it, like, and this is what's fascinating, is as soon as you see it, you can't run from it, because it hits you in the gut, which is your authentic self. And for the first time in your life, you're going to discover the difference between what I call the trauma gut and the authentic gut feeling. That knowing where you're like, oh, he's right. Like
it can feel like an insult in the beginning. That's
why it does. Because then you realize, oh my God, I have been in deception my whole life. And now for the first time, you see the separation between your authentic self. Now, some people call that the ego or the shadow, or, you know, I call it the adapted self. You know, there are all these different names. Okay.
I call it my acting character.
Sure.
My part for the day.
Whatever. Parts. Yeah. Everyone.
The mask.
All of those terms, and they're all the same.
Yeah.
Ego, shadow, adapted wounded child, adapted self, blah, blah, blah. Parts.
Showmanship.
They're all just throw them in this bucket. And so once you use this process that I lay out and you feel that separation, you do feel insulted. And it's this. It's all of this that feels the insult, because it's shame. And that's what this lives off of, is shame. Pure shame. And for the first time, because the feeling inside is a knowing of this is right. And then what comes over is this, that goes, I'm bad, I'm attacked, you know, blamed. That's right there. There's your childhood trauma. That's the induced shame that your parents and society placed into you. For the first time, you see that separation. That's what's so powerful about it. Now, most will run because of denial and self-deception, also because of how the brain works, the left hemisphere. It's a denial-making monster. And so it'll double down in its falseness and then flip the script and make itself a victim. I lay that out, you know, that's really convincing when you read how the brain works. And so that's the thing, is when people realize this and I lay it out, they're just going to be like, I mean, those who won't be able to accept it, it's because that shame core is so deep, so intense, and the detachment from their authentic self is so embedded. It's going to take them a while, and it will feel like I'm assaulting them and blaming them. But that's the parents' voice, not mine.
There are a couple things I want to hit here that you talked about that are powerful points to address. So when you talk about the left brain, I know from the work that it comes from, basically the left brain producing that type of self-sabotage comes from the adaptations that went through in childhood. Basically the programming, you know, some people call it now the source code, you know, how you create an application, how you make it run. And then we develop these habits from childhood based on that. Here's the thing that I've been thinking about throughout everything you've been sharing is I fully support it. I'm down for it. And I, as you've seen, I love this journey, but I'm also witnessing there are many systems in place that are guarding the old ways. I'm talking about the school systems, government systems, parenting systems, business systems, even bosses, managers, mm-hmm. A lot of people in authority that control people and systems, right? And even how you get to success in life financially, how you get to success in career, how you get to success in love and relationships, that influence and educate and program a lot and control even like the fact that everything stays that way, a lot of the population, so that people grow into denial mechanisms. Right. It, this is where a lot of phrases, no matter in which of those fields I'm talking about, they show up, like suck it up. Right. Or it's supposed to be hard. Right. Or if it's meant to be, it'll just be like all these sort of phrases show up supporting these systems. It's just the way it is. Right. I could keep going on and on with these phrases. career, like I said, government, education, love and relationships. What do you see around that your book could contribute to in a positive way? Because the way I see it is there's a resistance from those systems that have a strong influence on how we operate as a society. And civilization, in my eyes, needs a wake-up call. It needs your book. It needs to read it. Yeah. But what do you think about, how do you think that's going to play out? What's your prediction when it comes to this?
Well, from Chuck, here's part of the response to your chapter. The internet's role in creating self-deception and the detachment from the authentic self. The internet's role in creating self-deception and the destruction of relationships. The internet's role in creating self-deception and the destruction of media. The internet's role in creating detached parenting. The successful, intelligent person's self-deception and detachment from themselves. How science and medicine create self-deception and the detachment from the self. In other words, you're dead right. I show very convincingly that the most successful are the most deceived because they run all of that. And it's called the intelligence paradox. There's a book and this has been proven that the so-called smartest people on the planet, the most intelligent, they are the ones that run industry. All the industries that you said, all right? Unfortunately, while they may have the highest IQ, they have the lowest common sense. And so because they're so smart, they get bored. And so they create all of these destructive processes and frivolous ideas and concepts that are massively destructive to everyone on the planet because they lack common sense. And that's not, that's just fact.
Like, what is common sense to you?
What's that? Well, the common sense would be, it's obvious that all of these processes aren't working, but that's the left hemisphere. When given proof that it doesn't work, that its line of thinking is wrong, it sees that proof of its falseness as proof to keep going, to actually double down and go even further in that direction. That's how the left hemisphere is a denial-making monster, and it is what the intelligent people are caught in because they've been conditioned to stay away from emotion. The way our brain works is everything comes into the right hemisphere. In our right hemisphere pulls from all of our emotions first. We feel before we ever think in everything we do, all right? And so then it creates a generalized assumption based on past experiences of what happened, sends it over to the left. The left then trims it down, and it's supposed to send it back to the right side for a last and emotional sifting to create the greatest intellect and most balanced decision. What's missing in our culture and society, because starting with the church hundreds of years ago, they wouldn't allow science to go to emotions. We're so underdeveloped and uneducated emotionally, and we've promoted this left hemisphere logic, it doesn't get to the right. And that's the lack of common sense, is it's all based in analytical, critical thinking, which is skewed and incorrect. And when you show it that, like, look, I blow up COVID. I mean, it's just a disgrace. And all that. I knew it back then when it came out, and now all the studies are showing, like, the shots don't work, that Pfizer, you know, the medication that was sent to us was only tested on 40 people. Like, they did, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into it. And Fauci's duplicity, like, all of it.
Yep.
But people are going to read that, and I warn them, this is what's going to happen. Like, I lay out, your brain's going to do this, 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 and this. Like, I'm trying to help them see, like, I'm going to call you out on all of these things, on transgender and all of these policies. And here's what your brain is going to say. Like, I literally tell you, your brain is going to say and do this. And this is what you want to look for.
It's going to say you're crazy. That's a conspiracy. This is a bunch of BS. What
are your credentials? Yeah, they're common self-deception. This is the other thing I show in the book. There are 21 techniques that people in self-deception use that the CIA has developed. that if you use any combination of these 21 things in the first 5 seconds, you're in deception. Well, what you'll find out is when you read these, that's how we all talk to ourselves. It's how we all behave on a daily basis, minute by minute, having a conversation about oranges. Like, it's that ingrained in society, self-deception. Like, I'm telling you, I've really put people in a box. You're just going to go, oh my God, we're all lying nonstop over the simplest things.
You're so right. But the biggest problem, this is why I say, what's your prediction? The question here is
it's going to be very polarizing.
Well, because they immediately criticize and say, no, you're crazy, right? That's the gaslighting.
That right there proves that proves you're in deception.
Nope.
Right there. And I show it. I'm like, this is, if you react in these ways, this is your denial. Like, this is backed by science, not an opinion. This is how it works. Like,
and that's when
they'll double down anyway.
And that's when they get to almost accept it and then go, this is not science. This is an industry trying to take advantage of me and take my money now.
Bingo. You just used two convincing statements on top of each other. Denial.
Yep.
That's hot right there. That's one of the 21 techniques. Plus, you add that in with your body, the way your body changed, it removed your anchor points. Those two happened in your response. You're sitting across from a CIA agent. They would know you're in deception right there. Like, that's it.
That's fascinating. I mean,
you just exhibited two of the 21 traits as you made up a false, a joking around answer. But yeah. Your body, this is the thing, is our bodies can't lie. And so your words were lying, but your body couldn't. And so as you're even making it up, you put those two together. And that's deception. Like,
discomfort, yeah.
Right there. Because you're going, oh, I know. And so your body's changing its anchor point. And then to try and convince your body, you use back-to-back convincing statements. That's deception. And so that's what I mean. Like, the book is going to be polar. For those in severe deception, they're just going to go ballistic. They're going to double down. And here's what's fascinating about the left hemisphere. This is why you see the explosion of victim identities and cancel culture, is the left hemisphere, even when shown it's wrong and doubling down on its falseness, it takes it one step further. It flips the script and makes itself the victim. Mm-hmm. And that's what they'll do. So the ones that aren't ready for this, it'll get ugly. The ones that are will be like, oh my God, I'm set free. So it'll be a very polarizing book. And there will be some in the middle, but, for those who are really far out there and really deceptive, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough read. Unless you've had it, then you're just going to be like, oh my God, thank God. Now I know. I knew something was off. Why isn't anyone, you're going to be overjoyed. You'll be in tears. You'll be like, finally, now I understand. And this, why hasn't anyone laid this out? I'm curious to see what happens, and a lot of that depends on, will the book take off or not? Will people see?
But it seems like your prediction is a lot of people are going to get pissed off. That's the first step.
Well, and that's my projection of my fears. That's the little child in me who's scared to death that everyone will get pissed. I don't know that that's true. Like, I'm, my saying that, see, I recognize there's deception in me saying that. I have no idea if that's true. This is how emotions work. And remember, everything out of our mouth is emotion-based, not thought-based. Every thought starts from an emotion. So the origin of that thought comes from my childhood, where if I spoke my truth, it didn't go well. Well, I'm speaking the truth. And so my fears about that are all based on what happened to me as a child. I have no life experience. I just put the book out. So I have no life experience that this is going to go bad. My prediction This is how our brain works. Our brain works on predictions. It doesn't work in the present. It works in the past. We create predictions of things based on our childhood trauma history and our emotional history. And so it's quite possible, another prediction could be, it blows up, is wildly successful, and even those that are in massive deception go, oh my God, this is wonderful. And that's possible too. You know, I don't know. I've tried to approach it from a very loving place and confront that deception without denigrating. You know, because most times when people confront deception, they do it by belittling somebody else. And that you generally don't, no one really wants to, you know, have their deception or their reality challenged from a belittling place. They created the deception because that's what they experienced from their parents. So they're not going to be open to it. You know, I feel I did it from a very kind and loving place and didn't judge or belittle. I just pointed it out, but I also allowed them to stay right where they are and to not have to accept the, you know, this reality. And if they don't want to, it's okay. You know, it's up to them. It's their choice. So maybe that's what they've needed, is somebody to be loving enough to go, it's okay if you're not ready for this. It doesn't make you bad. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'll go, maybe that's the light switch. And I don't know. I mean, you know, I make assumptions and predictions based on how the current culture responds to a lot of things.
Right.
You know, and so it would make sense to me. You know, those who are pro-COVID, even though there's innumerable facts about what a disaster it was and how wrong it was, facts won't matter to them. Yeah. Because it confronts their attachment authenticity bind. It confronts their belief system and their denial, and they don't want to admit the truth. And that's their low self-esteem, and that's the shame they're avoiding experiencing because of what they went. That's all childhood trauma. So any of these topics that they, even though I've laid out the facts, it's, you know, here it is, the left hemisphere, I'm showing you, no, you're wrong. Their attachment authenticity bind and the worst day cycle that they're caught in, their shame and denial, won't allow them to see truth. Well, that makes me sad. Like, that's heartbreaking, you know, that they're in that much pain. And I warn the side, you know, because, you know, a lot on this side of the fact, a lot of this is political too, you know. And so I warn the side, the cancel culture warriors are primarily on the political left. And so I show how they're in deception and that they're actually not protecting people, they're hurting people. I show convincingly, like it's not even up for debate. Well, the political right is going to use that against them. And I warn them, do you realize the second you judge, blame, and criticize them for that, you're talking to you. So be very careful about belittling and shaming them.
Yeah.
Because that's you running from your own.
Both coming from a deep lack of self-esteem and compassion and empathy for themselves.
It's a detachment from their inherent value and worth, from their authentic selves. They're operating out of the worst day cycle, the shame-based codependent side of things, and they're either exercising it from the disempowered place or the falsely empowered place. And so the second you attack them for it, you realize you're not talking to them. Your authentic self is talking to you, trying to tell you what you need to address. So be careful that you do from pointing the finger.
Kenny, I have witnessed how many opportunities were given and everybody's given to face their denial with compassion, empathy, and all the right things. Why is denial, a constant coming back to denial, so attractive?
Because of the attachment authenticity bond. Here I am, an infant. The first 7 years of life, we're in a theta brainwave state. We're not conscious. We're in the same brainwave state as hypnosis. So most people go, I didn't have childhood trauma. That's because they were in hypnosis. They don't even remember how they were traumatized. All right. By the time consciousness comes online, it's been programmed into them. Now, it's a life or death. There's a life-saving mechanism. you know, to minimize, suppress, condone, and justify our parents' poor behavior. We have to do that. We're a child. We're an infant. We're 7 to 10 years old. How the hell are we going to survive? We can't survive. And so we have to. And so as even though we're an adult, that's why, you know, Julian James pointed out 95 to 99% of our adult life, we're just reliving our subconscious. We're not even conscious adults. And the proof of that is when you show them the truth, they react with all that shame and denial that you're describing. That's a childhood state. They're stuck, detached from their authentic self. They're in the induced shame that their parents dumped into them. And that feeling is so powerful because feelings run our lives, not our thoughts. And that feeling is so big, that trauma is so big, they're transported back to 2, 5, 8, 10 years old, where the feeling is too big. Think of it. All the hurt, like you're in enough presence as to how damaging your childhood was. And think of, could you imagine an 8-year-old getting into truth about how scary your childhood was? No way. It's too big. Well, because we haven't learned emotional authenticity, we haven't taught as a society, nobody's done the work. And so when it's confronted, we're transported right back there. It's too much.
Somatically, especially, that's the thing. I think somatics is a topic and an experience that hasn't been discussed almost at all when it comes to psychological healing, even in the world of psychiatry, where they mainly push pills. And when Levine, you're talking about
Levine has done a great job with that.
Peter. Absolutely. There are some like Peter Levine
and Walker.
Walker as well, right? That have done fantastic. But I say again, we're talking about two names right now. And maybe if
Bessel van der Kolk. I mean, they should be the voices, not Elaine Aaron pushing, you know, genetic BS.
That's what I mean, that it's still pretty new and it's very few people so far that a lot of people don't know. First of all, they don't know that when you start doing this work, I experienced this myself, by the way, and I've heard it from a friend recently, where when you start getting deep into the trenches of facing your denial and unwinding it and recognizing and growing and healing, it is the body is excruciating pain that's felt, because all of a sudden we're feeling what hasn't been felt decades in the past, all adding up. And also, so we're faith, you know, that's a step that's not as recognized, right, and as acknowledged, and not all people know about. And then those that do know about it and are new to it, it's easy to get scared. I have a friend that told me that, like, they've been doing great with the healing, but once they got to this stage of feeling crazy amounts of pain, where it's like, I see it from, you know, from my witness perspective, I'm like, wow, what a massive breakthrough you're about to go through. But they see it through, dude, I feel like I'm about to die physically. I got the flu.
Because that's what's dying, is the false attachment you created, the ego, shadow, parts, all the, that's exactly, it is a death. You have to die. You have just entered fall, and the leaves have fallen from the tree, and the ground is getting cold, and those leaves are decomposing, and they're going to, you know, decompose into the soil so that spring new seeds can sprout. Like, that's a law of nature. You must die. That's why everything falls off the tree. And that's the experience we all must go through. And I'm trying this. I don't have the power. I'm trying to suggest that we might want to give everyone permission and make that normalized societal behavior, that this is fact. We all must do this. And the old messaging of, oh, the past is in the past, oh, it doesn't, all those things. That's how the tree dies. And that's why.
Well, it's the change of the seasons.
Yeah.
But I'll add to this, Kenny, which is This also comes from number one, realizing that when we're going through that pain, the body pain, a lot of us don't really know how to take care of ourselves, or have gotten the messages of not taking care of ourselves is good. Like, no offense to the people that love David Coggins, but I'm really against his mentality of punish the body to grow, kind of, you know.
He's in here too.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, we talked about him, but very lovingly. What's that?
Very lovingly, not despairing.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. I see with everybody, it's related to what you said about empaths. From the trauma comes a virtue, but also from the self-deception that comes from the trauma, a way in which we sabotage, right? So it can be a double-edged sword. It's like you say in your first book, Journey to Success, are you leveraging your trauma to live your best life, or are you unintentionally having it get you back to your worst day, right?
Self-deception and denial left unconfronted and unaddressed guarantees you will relive it and stay stuck. And so that's what I'm trying to point. That's the other thing I point out in this book is I'm advocating for an update in the definition of denial. Denial has always been classified as a defense mechanism. I couldn't agree more that it starts there. We are so underdeveloped emotionally, we don't have the skills to process what happens to us, and so we deny it. That's healthy. What I think I show convincingly is when left unaddressed, it boomerangs back and becomes the single greatest attack mechanism on the planet today. It is a world-consuming atomic bomb that is destroying us all. And so we need to stop calling it a defense mechanism, and we need to call it both an initial defense mechanism, but people need to be alerted that if it is not addressed, it will destroy you. It will most certainly destroy you and anything and everything you come in contact with. And so I don't just point that out. I also show the process of how to learn to start confronting it, and so that it doesn't destroy you anymore. And I've never seen anyone lay out. The closest is Byron Katie. But I think I've come up with some really good processes that make it very clear how to confront your. It's not difficult to do. The processes are very straightforward and simple. And they'll get you into truth like immediately. And there's several different ones depending on which, you know, the way you do things. So yeah. I think there are a lot of processes I've suggest that I think might be very helpful in the psychology field. Not just coaching, but base knowledge in psychology that textbooks and things like that.
Now that you mentioned that when it comes to your process, I think you got great tools and step-by-step direction on how to address the somatic aspects of the healing along with the psychological and all the, you know, this 360 approach. Because that's the thing, it doesn't work with just the intellect, and it doesn't even work with just the psychology. And when it comes to facing denial, which is what this book is about, but facing denial is just, you know, it's the door into the rest of the journey, right? That's to be faced in order to grow. And yes, we say grow, we say heal, but we're talking about living life how we want, you know, with the people that we want, with a lot of love, with a lot of abundance, financially, relationally, you know, material things as well, right? We do need some essential things to survive.
Yeah. Money is a need. It's not a want. Yeah. It's a need.
Yeah.
You need money. You need to feed yourself. You need to clothe yourself. You need to house yourself.
People are even in denial about that. Some people are in denial that they need a bed to sleep in. I used to be that guy. I would, you know, be okay with an air mattress for a while. I've had even clients that have, they say like, oh yeah, when I met my husband, you know, he was just, he just had a TV on the floor and a mattress on the floor. He's had it that way for years, and he's a doctor. And I'm like, You know what I mean? Like, he's making the money. It's not like he doesn't have the money.
Just doesn't. He's lost touch with his inherent value and worth. He doesn't think he's worth a bed or a couch. That's
and there's a denial about that.
Severe deprivation. Yeah, and that's my point. You know, that's what I show is, you know, the most successful, they set up our world. Our world is this crazy because the so-called normal, intelligent people are so sick. But our society says, no, these are the ones that aren't sick. They're,
you know what it gets me thinking, Kenny?
And so these down here have common sense. They see that, but these don't. They don't have common sense.
This is what gets me thinking that it was all born from a place of power and control. I mean, think about it. Medieval times, I mean, thousands of years ago, even Roman Empire. It seems like this is, you know, this was not a thing that was born yesterday. It's a thing
that's what shame is.
Shame leverage is power. Controlling the masses.
Well, it starts internally. And yes, power and control is a shame dynamic. Okay. And because we're looking for certainty of outcome. And we can get the, and so the, what create, how do I want to say that? So those in power and control are in severe shame because they're trying to mitigate how out of power, how out of control and powerless they are. So the expression of how they're trying to control and have power over everything is how disempowered they feel. And so then to hide that disempowerment, they become falsely empowered. And so it's what I point out. This isn't new. This has been going on in the species for billions of years because we've never taught about the worst day cycle, you know, we're 50 years into really openly teaching about emotions. We're just,
the world is brand new. Not even Aristotle or the Stoics that a lot of people revere nowadays. You know, it's all about the Marcus Aurelius stuff, which I actually disagree with a lot of. And I think he's a guy of pure wisdom in some aspects, but even he dismissed emotions.
And we know neuroscientifically, every single thought starts with an emotion. Here's the problem. People don't realize emotions are also created by the body. So like I use an example in the book. I was sitting here writing and I was struggling with something. So I got up and went down to make a cup of coffee. And as I came up, you know, I started writing and my writing was really angry. And I paused. I'm like, what's going on? Well, I traced back because what I was trying to get across to people, because people still think everything is by thought, even though, you know, people don't care about statistics. At any rate, what I realized is I went downstairs. I was barefoot. There's the coolness of the tile on my feet as I'm standing there making the cup of coffee. What I recognized is the coolness triggered a memory of when I was a child and my mom would give me ice baths because I ran such high fevers. I hate the cold. It pissed me off. Then I grabbed the cup of warm coffee. It soothed me. I went over. I grabbed a handful of popcorn from the night before, stuffed it in my mouth. Instantly felt guilt because feeling a little fat. Going, shoot, I probably should have waited. I turn the corner, I head up the stairs, really loud car goes screaming by, honking its horn. Instantly enraged because I pictured my father's booming voice. Also, my older brother, when I was dead asleep, would scream in my ear. Walk upstairs. Well, no freaking wonder I'm writing angry. See, that's what people don't realize. They think they're thinking. Mm. All of those emotions created all of those thoughts, but we're not conscious and present to all of the things our bodies, because remember, our right hemisphere, our emotional hemisphere takes in everything, all five senses, but it's too much to process. So it only holds on to what it feels is important. What it holds on to most is the trauma it's experienced. And so there's the perfect example of my brain and body holding on to the trauma that I've experienced, that it was totally out of conscious awareness, that I wasn't even thinking about. But because I know emotional authenticity, I used the process, was able to trace it all back and go, oh my God, I'm reliving my dad, my mom, my brother, blah, blah. Well, no wonder I'm writing angry. Do the work, boom, now I see it. And so where did it lead me? Got me reattached. It got me out of shame and denial, the worst day cycle, last two stages. I got into truth, responsibility, healing, and forgiveness, the authentic self cycle, through the process of emotional authenticity. What am I feeling? Where in my body do I feel it? What's my first memory? And in doing that, I reattach to my inherent value and worth, my authentic self. I see the picture of what's going on, and all I had to do was type in what I just went through. Boom, the perfect example that people need. But do you hear all the processes going on there? How many people know those processes? Like, nobody. Well, just that's why our world is the way.
Just step one is like, for most people that I've noticed, even for myself when I started, how do you do that? The self-awareness part.
Yeah. They wouldn't even think to trace their steps, and they're so detached emotionally, they wouldn't know, they wouldn't connect the coolness of the tile on their feet to the ice baths, or the guilt from the popcorn, or the loud car to dad's voice. Like, they don't have the depth and breadth and the specificity to their emotions to reconnect to themselves. They're detached from, I've spent decades cataloging, using what am I feeling, where am I body. So now all those memories surface. I get present to it, then break it down. I create a new simulation concept and definition for them. And that allows me to reattach to myself. And so I don't act out of the past. Well, we don't know how to do that. Well, that's why I wrote the book. Is here's how you do it. Now it's going to take work, which we don't.
This is why I love very, very young kids that are very aware of their sensations and immediately call things out. Even though obviously their brain is not developed enough to have some of the abilities that we have.
Yeah,
they're very honest. They're immediate. And some of those capabilities, have you noticed how they are?
Yeah, and that gets stripped. That's the attachment authenticity bind. They find that's their authenticity being expressed. Yeah. And then their parents squash that. And yeah, that's why kids smile 400 times a day, an adult less than 20.
Yeah.
Because the parents, because of their own shame, they shame that. They squash it. And yeah, that's where deception starts, right there. Yeah. Parents don't know how to deal with it. And yeah, so
that's why I've noticed it's like we were born with this stuff. It's been stripped away for many of us.
All of us.
The natural element of our existence. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talk about that. Why is everyone afraid to change? Well, I mean, not very few of us remember this. But what happens when a child first starts walking? What do they do? Crawling and walking, where do they go and what do they do? They go anywhere. The stairs, the pool, like they're not afraid of anything, right? Mm-hmm. They just explore the world. Mm-hmm. What happens when they explore? What do parents do? Stop.
Don't go there. Don't touch that.
Parent is scared to death, has never dealt with their shame core, their fear core. So instead of from a calm, measured, emotionally balanced place, come over and and scoop the child up. They, bam, shame, anger, fear, over and over. And so now we're adults. Someone comes along and lays out a process and we go, oh my God, change. Boom. They're not even consciously aware that their fear of change is triggering being that age and going out exploring the world. What exploring? Me exploring? No. That didn't go well for me. And so they don't even know that that's what they're reliving in that moment. And then they'll hear me and go, you're just blaming parents. Boom. Shame. I'm not blaming parents. Look, we're human. But see, do you see? So it's like everything. It just goes right back to shame and denial. Shame and denial. Left hemisphere. Going to double down on its falseness and now make itself the victim that I'm blaming parents. Like, it's just a never-ending loop.
You know what's interesting, Kenny? I went on a trip on Disney recently, Disney World, because I used to love that place when I was a child. And as an adult, I think, especially during this journey, you see things differently, especially with the awareness, not just for yourself, but your environment and those around you. And I noticed as I was walking and witnessing, you know, the multitudes of people, the duality, because it's the happiest place on earth described as that, right?
And they're all miserable.
And I was like, I do see some happy people, but I see a lot of miserable people too. That's what I noticed. Yeah. I was like, you know, when I was standing in lines, where I was walking, no matter, even in a ride. And the number one thing I noticed about those that were unhappy was somebody was treating them in an abusive manner. And they were allowing them. And it actually shocked me for the first time I witnessed this. So, because I was like, wow. Because the company you keep around does really matter, no matter where you're at, right? Even the happiest place on earth.
And what that tells me is they're just doing what was done to them as a child. They were abused as a child, and they picked a partner, and they're just reliving it. They're stuck.
Yeah. And what it also told me is a lot of people, I guess, go to Disney for escapism then, for fueling their denial. Think about it. They spend thousands and thousands. I mean, it's not cheap to go to Disney World. Even for a day, I noticed. And so when I was witnessing this, I was like, man, so much for the happiest place on earth that we invest so much money and, you know, and energy, resources, think about it, savings on. Like, but as I look at them, I can also see in their face how for many of them, it's like all they live for. It's like the reason they saved all this money all year to then enjoy for these 2 weeks. And then they're having this experience. And then their face also shows, or maybe even their body, you know, through their health shows that they're maybe enjoying this, but they're about to get back into the grind and the life that they don't really like. So, you know, it's been, you know, eye-opening to witness this with whole families. And I say duality because I did also see the other side. As I was standing in line, I saw a grandma holding a child, no more than like 2-3 years old, crying incessantly, loudly. And she was so calm, so loving. I was right behind her, so chill. And that I was like, I had to acknowledge it and tell her. I was like, you know, you are just an angel for that child. And she's like, oh, it's what grandmas do. And I was like, man, it is so beautiful to see this. And I think for me, it was even a part of my growth and my journey to see both sides. Because I think when we're facing denial, my experience has been that and I've seen it in others too, that's why I mentioned it, that it's easy to all of a sudden get into just seeing then the denial in others, the wrongdoings, the negative, and that's when blaming and criticizing starts to want to take on a more prominent role in our everyday life. But this duality has now introduced me to, okay, all the colors of the rainbow. Look at the good, look at the not so good. Look at the beautiful.
Yeah, because denial works in the opposite too. Like that's one thing I point out in the book is you're going to want to use these 21 mechanisms to figure out other people, but I'm not putting them in there so you can figure out how they're lying. I'm putting these in here so you can figure out how you lie. So you're right. The key is to quit spending so much time blaming them and making them the bad one, and instead get into truth, take responsibility, and look at how you're doing this yourself. Now, the other thing about denial and self-deception is, remember, judgment, blame, and criticism is about us. But so are compliments, praise. The positive is about us as well. So when you see greatness in others, the only reason you can see it in them is because it's in you. Well, that's a whole nother world. You want to talk about exposing somebody's shame?
Mm-hmm.
The second, you know, they're going, oh my God, you're so great. And you let them know, you do realize that's you talking to yourself. And they buckle underneath the weight of insignificance and go, I can never be that. Well, that's the detachment from self and inherent value and worth. That I find heartbreaking. That, you know, so both show, you know, the duplicity of that, show how we're detached from ourselves.
Well, that's why I brought this up, because not even Disney World can help you be happy.
Yeah.
At the happiest place on earth, if you haven't faced your denial. Yet those that have, I just witnessed that grandma, and like I even witnessed myself as I've been doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to enjoy not just the, you know, the Disney World stuff, but the experience of witnessing what you're saying, actually, the good in others is actually the good in me as well. And to wrap up that story, by the way, the child ended up falling asleep. But you know why that story is so meaningful to me? Because when I grew up, I remember what my mother and my stepfather would have done with the same child. They would have screamed at the kid, hit him on the mouth, and yelled at him until they stopped crying and told him to stop crying. And yes, I think of it right now and it's disgusting to me, but that's what I experienced as a brother done to my sister. That's what I witnessed as a brother done to my brother, my both younger than me. And so that's, in a way, witnessing that grandma with this awareness was healing. It was like, that's how I can show up for others too.
Yeah.
And that's the part of this beauty that comes from facing denial, studying denial, working on denial, growing, you know, with tools like your book and your journeys, that I really want to highlight, because we talk a lot about, you know, the problems and the issues and the, you know, the hardship, but there's this other side that's so worth it.
Yeah. It, I would love to see denial and self-deception be the main focus in recovery work. You know, more than self-esteem, because it's the only way to get true self-esteem. Because until you can love and accept your imperfect parts, you can never accept your imperfections. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, I lay that out, what I call the scales of injustice. The key to true self-esteem is the ability to accept all that's broken, all that's imperfect, all that is denied. And I would love to see a shift in society around that.
Yeah.